My name is Kimberly King Parsons, and my debut novel is We Were the Universe.
Kimberly King Parsons captured the attention of the literary world in 2019 when her short story collection titled Black Light was longlisted for the National Book Award. And now she has penned her debut novel, We Were the Universe, which follows a young mother coping with the tragic death of her younger sister. I recently spoke with Kimberly King Parsons about how this novel was inspired by real life. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Kimberly King Parsons. So let's set the book up for our listeners. How would you describe it?
So when we first meet our protagonist, Kit, she is a sort of typical stay-at-home mom, or at least she seems like she is from the outside. But really quickly, we learn that she is dealing with a lot of unresolved pain and guilt surrounding the death of her sister, Julie, which took place a few years before the novel begins. And things have sort of started to come to a head with that situation. And Kit's feeling more and more out of control every day, even though she's adhering to this very rigid suburban mom routine with her daughter.
So I read in the publisher's note that came at the front of my galley that We Were the Universe is in part inspired by aspects of your own life. Are you comfortable talking about, you know, could you share a bit about how your reality inspired this fiction?
Without going into too much detail, I lost a loved one and the grief really took over my whole world. And the way that grief worked for me was it completely consumed my present moment. And I found myself being sort of pulled back in time constantly, remembering this person and missing them. And I wanted to try to write a book to capture that feeling of the way that time becomes so strange when you're experiencing grief. And also the way that everyone processes grief differently. And so on top of everything, there's the sensation that you're doing it wrong, which can make things even worse. You're already feeling so bad about the loss, but then that feeling of, well, am I grieving properly? You know, can also be another layer of anxiety around an already really horrible situation.
Well, and I was wondering why this was set 4 years after Julie's death, because she's not coping well. Is that why you chose this time period? Why did you choose the 4 years after her death when Gilda is four?
So Julie passes away when Kit is pregnant. And I think that there's this real sensation of, you know, call it like divine mammalhood that sort of takes over when you have a baby, where you're just really focused on that child. So focused, in fact, that everything else can sort of be compartmentalized or put on hold. And I feel that at this point when we meet Kit, she's just reaching the end of that time period where Gilda is now about to be 4 years old. She is starting to gain some independence, although she's quite a handful as a child. But I feel that Kit is sort of finally realizing, wait, I now actually have to process some of these things that I have not processed. And also, I think that sometimes grief takes a really long time. My big thing during my loss was the sensation that I just didn't believe it was true. I just couldn't believe that it had happened. And I kept having to sort of that cognitive dissonance of, you know, knowing someone's gone and then still wanting to call them on the phone. And it was really hard. It took me a long time, years, to really accept it. And then I think with that acceptance comes a lot of pain, you know, a lot of unresolved pain.
You know, I was struck by this one paragraph, and it's how Kit is approaching grief. And maybe you can comment on it on the other side. Don't let anybody see the full picture. Break yourself into pieces. Scatter the loss over time and space. Divide your heartache. Sure, death is one thing people will let you open your jaws and scream about for a while, especially when someone dies young. It isn't fair. I'll never get over it, etc. But what nobody admits is how incredibly dull grief is to witness.
Yeah, I think she goes on to say it's non-transferable, like a toothache. It's so intense to the person who's experiencing it. And yet from the outside, you know, people will, they want you to talk about it a little bit, and then they want to sort of move on and get on with their day. Or after a certain amount of time has passed, they sort of expect you to be okay, or to have, you know, somehow absorbed this fact into your life. And I just find that it's not always the case. And so it feels very isolating in that way, because it's this thing that's a constant for you, but you're living your life and, you know, you're taking your daughter to the playground, you're doing all these things, but then there's just this sort of low buzz in the background, all of everything that is that loss.
You know, you've kind of alluded to this already, but, you know, although Kit is in many ways a successful and good mother, she is haunted by the shadow of addiction in a few different forms. Her sister's substance abuse, her mother's hoarding, even her own small fixations like on Hot Dad or Celadon. Can you talk to me about the nature of Kit's own addictions and how she manages to escape them?
Sure. I think that for Kit, she is really sort of pleasure seeking in a way that's not exactly healthy for her. So anything that's going to buy her a brief reprieve from this grief that she's now feeling really floored by, I think she looks for that. So she's looking for other ways to obsess about something else. So maybe it's, yeah, the hot dad from the playground, like that's easier to obsess about than the loss of a sister. And also, you know, these little small pleasures, like she's looking at a lot of pornography. She's doing things that will bring her instant gratification in a short moment, but that aren't offering any lasting relief from her pain. And also her normal coping mechanisms are sort of off the table because she does want to be a good mother. And so she's, you know, she drinks with her friend Pete in Montana, but she's not drinking. She's not doing any drugs. She's in a monogamous relationship with her husband. And yet there are all of these, this sort of ghost of these things that she knows are there, these tools that could potentially help her cope, but she's not able to access them anymore, which is a kind of torture.
You know, I was noticing that she tells us about her past almost in a confessional way. To see her actions as a mother, the reader can see that she is so self-sacrificing for her child. She doesn't drink or do drugs because she's breastfeeding. She's fastidious about germs. And she even mothers her own mother and sister a bit. Yet we hear her internal voice throughout that she doesn't feel like the best mother. Why is that?
I think that one thing you learn really quickly when you have children is that people have a lot of very strong opinions about ways to parent, and they're not shy about telling you when they think you're doing something wrong or weird. And I feel that Kit is very, she's young and she's very susceptible to outside opinion. And I think that because she wasn't planning to, Gilda was a surprise that she, and you know, she's very happy that she has her, but I think she has the sensation that she's doing it wrong in the same way she has a sensation she's doing grief wrong, which, you know, I think it's part of her personality a little bit, but I think it's also a little bit about just being a woman in the world. You're very judged for things, as particularly being a mother. And I think that that's a lot to take when you're, you know, 25 years old.
The majority of the book is told from Kit's perspective, and it's so internal. How reliable is Kit as a narrator?
I think she's slightly unreliable. I think that she is very steadfast in her opinion about the way things are, but I think that she believes that she is the worst person in this novel. And I think and hope that we, as the reader, disagree with that, with that idea, and that we think she's actually, you know, she really is just trying her best and trying and failing and making mistakes. I'm so endeared to characters who don't have everything figured out and who are sort of fumbling through life. And Kit is a great example of one of those. And I do think she's really trying her best and she's doing a pretty good job. But for her, I think that her own perception of herself is perhaps unreliable.
I keep thinking about the meaningful relationships in Kit's life. Pete, yes, Jad, even Christian. Can you talk about her support system?
Sure. I mean, I think that, like me, Kit relies really heavily on found family because of the fact that she feels she was underparented. I think we can agree she was underparented. Maybe even that's not even an opinion. But I think so she's really reached out for friends that she considers family. And obviously Jad is her family, her husband, but her friends, I think, really take on a significant weight in her life, especially now with the loss of Julie. And so I think she's always looking for sort of, yeah, meaningful connections with people in general. And I do think she is a people person in many ways. And she's seeking out comfort and affection and all of the things that perhaps she did not necessarily feel coming from her mother when she was growing up. And also, I think that informs a lot of the way that she parents herself is because of what she was missing as a child growing up. She wants to make sure she can give those things to her child, even if perhaps she goes about them a little bit wrongheaded in a wrongheaded way. But yeah, I think that her friendships become, I mean, Pete is someone who you just know she's so focused on him and on what he's dealing with. But these people become like family. They're just that close.
I want to talk about the relationship between Kit and Julie. You know, like the title of the book comes from the band that Kit and Julie and their friend, Yes, formed when they were teenagers. The band's name was You Are the Universe, and the title is We Were the Universe. You know, from Kit's perspective, Julie was the main attraction of the band, and I feel like that she was the main attraction throughout her life, or do I understand that wrong? Talk to me about their relationship.
I think that's correct, and I think that at least, you know, when we meet Kit, she's already backward looking and she's already suffered through this loss. And so, of course, when you lose someone, it does sort of skew your perception of reality, and it builds a person up sometimes in your mind to be outsized of what was maybe the case in real life. And I do think this is part of Kit's unreliability a little bit as a narrator, is that we only hear what Kit's telling us, which is Julie was the only one with any talent. She was amazing. She was the best. And we were just kind of trying to keep up with her. But then there is a shift, without giving too much away. There is a shift at the end of the book where we do get a glimpse back at Kit, and we see this very capable, very different. We see a big sister in a way that it feels like we've been sort of narrated from the perspective of a little sister almost, or someone who's just feels like they're such a screw up in their life. And we see Kit in a really different way by the end of the book. And yeah, I think that their relationship is such that Kit has just really built Julie up in this way that Julie is Kit's universe. And you know, what's interesting is that this book was originally called The Boiling River. It was called that for years and years. Because that's the place where I started. The kernel of the story was just Kit sitting in the water, overwhelmed with grief when she's supposed to be healing. And then my publisher was like, can we have a conversation about the title? And I was so scared to change it. And I'm so glad that we did, because I feel this captures it so much more. It gets that longing with the we were the universe. It focuses so much more, I think, on the exuberance and that sort of the psychedelic aspects, instead of just, I don't know, The Boiling River also sounds a little bit like a nature book or like a climate change book or something. So I was really happy with the fact that we came to this title, and now it feels like it's always been the case. So
I'd like to talk about the structure of the book, because it shifts between past and present so seamlessly. I mean, if you blink, you almost miss these shifts. When you were laying out the plans for the book, did you write like all the present at one time and then weave in the past, or how did you craft it?
So originally, I handed this to my agent. It was 52 vignettes, and they were vignettes that were all in the present tense. Even the past was in the present tense, because I initially had this idea that I wanted to get to capture that feeling of grief consuming the present moment. And so I thought that would be a way to do it. And I was looking to books like Mary Gateskill's Veronica, where, you know, the character in that book is sort of cleaning houses, but she's remembering this really vivid, vibrant past when she was a model in New York City. And about, I don't know, a quarter of the way through the book, she just dispenses with the present plane entirely. We never come back to the present. We know that this is a woman cleaning houses, but we stay in the past. And I found that to be so moving. And so I was playing around with that idea, but very kindly, my agent suggested that perhaps that was a little bit confusing. And then when I was working with my editor, I had a couple of editors on this actually. My first editor said, why don't we keep the past in the past tense? And I thought, wow, sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Even though we realize how overwhelmed Kit is with that time and how seamlessly she slips into the past, the reader needs to be a little bit more aware of what's happening. And so I did write them simultaneously, sort of alternating kind of almost. But also the other thing that I had to work on was that I had all of the past tense was achronological. It was sort of emotionally chronological. So it might be that she has a memory of Julie and she's 5 years old. Then she has a memory of Julie and she's, you know, 19. But I then went back and sort of organized things so that the past tense moved chronologically in a similar way that the present tense did. And so they sort of started to, there was friction between them and they started to connect with each other. Whereas before it was sort of these disjointed, fragmented pieces, but all of them came sort of at the same time, but then it was just a lot of organizing.
Your first book, Black Light, is a story collection. It was long listed for the National Book Award, which is impressive not only because it was your first book, but we don't see short story collections considered for national awards often. Now, this is your first novel. How do you approach each of these forms? Is the writing process different?
So my writing process is the same. The way that I write is just sentence to sentence. I don't outline or have any real plan. It's just voice driven. And I just have to figure out a way to lock into a voice and to figure out who's talking to me. And then I'm just moving forward one line at a time, which is time consuming and often feels like you're sitting at a Ouija board waiting for someone to communicate with you. But the good thing about writing in this way is that when a scene is done, you're not having to go back and sort of polish up sentences. The sentences are coming out really clearly. It's just that it's slow going to get to that point. So it's a lot of tapping into a voice and then listening to a voice for a really long time and figuring out all the pieces. And that first draft, I never know where things are going. After the first draft, then I can write an outline. After I've got all the pieces, then I can look and say, okay, well, what do I have and what am I missing? I often talk about it like a short story to me is sort of like looking through a keyhole at a perfectly composed scene that you're not invited to. And a novel is like being invited into someone's house and you're able to look through their drawers and poke around in their closets. And so I'm trying to figure out how to be a little more hospitable to the reader to invite them in. So for me, a novel has a little bit more handholding and setup. Whereas with short stories, I think just the form itself means that people are willing to give you a little bit more grace. You can be a little antagonistic with the first line or paragraph of a short story. You don't have to be so welcoming. I think the expectations are a little bit different, but the way that I write is always exactly the same, which is just finding a voice and then listening to what it tells me.
Is Kit's voice similar to your voice at all? I mean, she has that subtle humor, sometimes sarcasm, and there are laugh out loud moments as well.
Yeah, I mean, the humor is definitely critical to me. And I find that I can watch really sad movies or listen to really sad music, and I don't m miss humor or need it. But I really need, as a reader, I need humor in novels. I don't know why, I just do. And so I definitely can relate to Kit, to Kit's personality in that respect and to her voice in that way. I think it's a coping mechanism, just like any other coping mechanism Kit has in the book. You really quickly, I can go from a tragic moment to figure out how I can spin it to make it funny, to make it something I can assimilate into my life. I was robbed once many years ago, and I like within minutes I was already figuring out a way to tell the story so it would be funny, because then you protect yourself and you put distance between the event and the sort of horror of something that happens to you. You get control over it when you take the reins in that way. Kit and I are definitely similar in that respect.
We've talked about a lot. Is there anything that you would like to talk about that I haven't asked?
I guess I just wanted to say, you know, how critical my friend group has been in the publication process, which I have a lot of really great writer friends living here in Portland, Oregon. And I feel so lucky and grateful to have this crew of people who I am able to reach out to and bounce ideas off of, but also just to remind me what I'm doing, to share our work in that way. Even, you know, not that we're necessarily reading each other's work, but just to be on the phone talking about a project, it makes the work seem real before it's real. And I just have been so incredibly grateful for the support of my friends. And I don't know how I could have done it without them. So, yeah.
Well, the book is We Were the Universe. Kimberly King Parsons, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Kimberly King Parsons, author of the book We Were the Universe, which was published by Knopf. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.